Marines Off Carriers by John F. McJennett, originally published in the 1945 December issue of Marine Corps Gazette, republished in January 2017 Leatherneck Magazine, as read by Nick Wilson. The target was Kagi Strip in central Formosa. On the morning of January 3, 1945, the carrier USS Essex, CV-9, turned into the wind. The first TBM Avenger lumbered noisily down the flight deck and lifted into the air. One after another, the bombers took off. The fighters thundered after. Not the stubby F-6F Hellcats, but the sleek, gull-winged F-4U Corsairs flown by fighter pilots from the Marine Fighter Squadrons 124 and 213. The first carrier-borne Marines to take off from a flight deck on a combat mission against the Japanese. VMF 213 and VMF 124 were the first of 10 Marine squadrons to operate with the Fast Carrier Task Force. Others followed shortly after. VMF 112 and VMF 123 boarded USS Bennington, CV-20, in late December. VMF 221 and VMF 451 joined Bunker Hill, CV-17, in January. VMF 216 and VMF 217 boarded WASP, CV-18, in February, and later 214 and 452 went to the ill-fated Franklin, CV-13. The record of these squadrons demonstrated the soundness of Marine aviation doctrine, which specified close support and carrier replacement as the primary and secondary missions of Marine pilots. After the early January strikes against the stronghold of Formosa, the Marines aboard Bunker Hill, WASP, and Bennington joined the now-famous February 16th attacks on Tokyo. They then swung south for strikes in support of landings on Iwo Jima and Okinawa, with interim visits to various ports of tactical importance from Kyushu to French Indochina, and then played a return engagement over the Japanese mainland. The record of their accomplishments includes 226 confirmed kills of airborne enemy planes, and 219 destroyed on the ground. They are officially accredited with sinking a destroyer, 7 cargo ships, 1 barge, 1 midget submarine, 148 smaller craft such as picket boats, luggers, landing craft, sampans, and fishing boats. 5 more freighters are listed as probably sunk. They put out of action with damaging hits a light cruiser, 3 destroyers, 4 destroyer escorts, 26 freighters, and 64 smaller craft on which the Japanese were leaning to keep supplies that were the lifeblood of the empire flowing. This score against surface craft was made with the light armament of the fighter plane. On only a fraction of their flights did Marine Corsairs load rockets or bombs. Marine losses, exclusive of those aboard Franklin, were comparatively light. Essex Marines had combat losses of 7 planes and 2 pilots, and those aboard WASP, 4 planes and 3 pilots. Bennington and Bunker Hill paid a stiffer price as a result of the kamikaze hits they sustained. VMF 112 and VMF 123 were reasonably typical of the squadrons which took over the carrier duty. Before coming aboard, no pilot had made more than 15 carrier landings, and 27 out of the 54 reporting had only made 8. None had made any night landings. Their training in instrument and weather flying was no more than that usually given to land-based units. Corsairs. Several developments of the air war in the Pacific had made it apparent to naval command that certain phases of fighting were beyond the capacities of the Hellcat. Steps had already been taken in anticipation of such a development to bring F-4Us aboard, but only a few Navy squadrons so equipped were ready. The Marine Corps had a number of experienced Corsair squadrons whose pilots had hundreds of combat hours in the plane on their logbooks. The answer was as obvious as time was short. The flyers were given a streamlined course in carry routine and bounce drill, and then went aboard. Details of the flights by 10 Marine squadrons over a period of 6 months during the final air offensive against Japan cannot be covered with a single article. They amount to a tactical tour of the remnants of the Japanese Empire and operationally ran the gamut from the housekeeping duties of the fighters in close support of ground troops and special interceptor patrols to the familiar and often flown missions against enemy aircraft over the target and ships and strips. Enumeration of the main strikes will give an idea of the extent and variety of their operations. 3 days after the January 3rd attack against the Kagi Strip in central Formosa, the Marines hit the Apari in Camiloingan strips in northern Luzon. Several days later, they were back over south central Formosa. Then they jumped to French Indochina with the primary target of the three strips adjoining the base at Saigon. Hainan and Takao Harbor were next. Then they moved up to Lashima and swung back to work over the Formosa strips again. The pattern of these strikes almost explains their purpose. They aimed at pinning down a Japanese aviation for the Lingayen landings. The inability of the Japanese Air Force to interdict the landings or stop subsequent supply convoys indicates a good measure of their success. Next on the list came strategic support for the assault on Iwo Jima, neutralization of airfields of the home islands. February 16th found Bennington, Bunker Hill, Essex, and Wasp with the rest of the fast carrier TASC off Japan launching against Tokyo in the first surprise raid. The Imperial City got another treatment the following day, and then the fast carriers pulled out for the south to throw their weight directly into the fight for Iwo. En route, Wasp stopped off long enough for Navy and Marine Corps flyers to pay punishing visit to the Tsuzaki Strip on Chichijima. On February 19th, the Marines took off for tactical attacks against Iwo targets, and in the next couple of days worked for the first time in close support of Marine infantry. Several days later, Shishi again played host, and it was Tokyo's turn again on February 25th, then back once more to Iwo. Mid-March saw the fast carriers striking Kyushu targets and then moving down to Ryukyu's in aerial preparation for Okinawa landings. Marine flyers, along with their Navy shipmates, provided tactical support for landings. On April 3rd, several squadrons took part in strikes against the airfields and installations at Sakishima. 2 days later, the Tokinashima Strip got a working over with napalm, rockets, and strafing. The April 7 docket was a shipping sweep, and 2 days later came a swing against suicide aircraft awaiting takeoff. After a spectacular day on interceptor patrol, the April 13th to 14th were devoted to Kikai and Tangashima airfields, and then Tokunoshima, Kikai, and Minami Daidoshima in Kyushu were hit. The routine narrowed in scope in late April through May. The primary mission of Task Force 38 was to support the reduction of Okinawa and to wipe out, as practicable, enemy air in southern Japan. In addition, the force was charged with the continued surveillance and neutralization of the Amami Gunto, Minami Daito, and Okino Daito. June saw the Marines doing some aerial housekeeping at Okinawa. There were sweeps up the island chain and to include southern Kyushu. They flew the Interdictory and Barrier Combat Air Patrol and took part in a turkey shoot of the kamikazes coming down in droves after fat bait of American shipping in the water around Okinawa. They ran fighter strikes on Kinoya and Minami and Okino Daito. There was plenty to keep them busy until the strips ashore were far enough developed to support tactical operations of a size sufficient to handle the island defense and to mount an aerial offensive against the home islands. Marine pilots flew a total of slightly more than 5,000 combat sorties, in excess of 20,000 combat hours. Workhorses of the group were the flyers aboard Bennington, who accounted for nearly half of the total. All but 360 sorties of the remainder were logged by the squadrons on Essex, 1,041 sorties for 3,635 hours. And Bunker Hill, incomplete records credit 1,000 sorties for 4,183 hours. VMF 216 and VMF 217 on Wasp flew 316 sorties for 1,602 hours, and the unfortunate Franklin, in her day and a half of warfare, put off 48 planes. Attacking Tokyo. Of the more notable strikes in which the Marines participated in their 6 months of carrier duty, the first attacks on Tokyo in mid-February just about topped the list. The mission initially was to knock out airborne opposition, then to go after aircraft revetted around the fields and work over field installations. February 16 fell considerably short of an ideal day for air operations. Rain and sleet lowered the ceiling to less than 200 feet in some areas, and nowhere was it higher than 2,000. At 25,000 feet, the temperature was 55 degrees below zero. The weather over the target was about as bad as it was around the fleet. Things started auspiciously. A four-plane combat air patrol from VMF 112 drew first blood at 0800 when they jumped and splashed a Betty, which was headed for the carriers. The strike flights got off without incident and pushed through the rotten weather, hoping for a break over the target. It was not to be. They arrived over Honshu at 25,000 feet and began to lose altitude slowly, looking for trouble. There were no Japanese planes airborne. A puzzled and somewhat disappointed flight of Marines continued down onto the deck and raked the Oshima Strip and neighboring installations. At Mobara and Katori and elsewhere, the sweep missions had the same experience. No aerial opposition, yet intelligence had reason to believe that in and around Tokyo, the Japanese had concentrated 600 first-line fighters. If they wouldn't defend Tokyo, what would they defend? Subsequent analysis of why the Japanese failed to get their fighters off the deck on this day could offer a single conclusion: that the Japs were taken completely by surprise. That the weather had permitted the carrier planes to get to their targets and strike before Japanese could get up to meet them. The strike scored heavily, but if the weather had hindered airborne defenses, it helped the Japanese anti-aircraft gunners. Low-hanging clouds compelled shallow dives and gave the gunners a ceiling against which they could check their bursts. The ground fires were rugged but ineffective. Marine pilots were credited with 9 grounded aircraft destroyed and 17 damaged, plus numerous hits on installations at Oshima, Mobara, and Katori. 2 airborne Zeeks were shot down and 8 planes were damaged on the ground on the fighter sweep against Hamatsu and Mikitagahara. On the way home, this flight burned a 4,000-ton tanker near Nishima. The group attacking the Kunoyaki airfield got 1 kill, 1 probable and 2 damaged out of 4 airborne and bashful Tohos, and wrecked 10 Bettys on the ground. Then they moved over to Hakoda, where they flamed 3 hangars, a return visit late in the afternoon while flying escort on a hop against Hamatsu and Mikitagahara, netted the Marines 9 grounded twin-engine planes of the Baka carrying type. On the way back to the carrier, they spotted a destroyer escort and a picket boat. The destroyer escort was left smoking, and the picket boat was probably destroyed. The absence of fighter opposition caused the brass to step up the schedule. The first day, which was to have been exclusively devoted to fighter sweeps, was reordered to include bombing strikes in the afternoon. The Marines played an escort role during these sweeps. The second day was one of mixed sweeps, fighter-bomber attacks, and bomber escort missions. The fleet weather was just as bad as it was the previous day, but as the flyers neared the coast, it lightened, and over the target was Kavu, ceiling and visibility unlimited. The Imperial City of Tokyo spread out beneath them. One squadron commander described it as a thrilling, beautiful sight. Atsugi and Tadayama Fields got a working over from the fighter bombers, with another flight following on strafing runs. The bombers laid all their eggs on the Atsugi Strip, which was described as being cluttered with twin-engine planes. There was no confirmed damage analysis of this particular strike, but it must have been considerable. All flights the second day reported airfields jammed with planes, probably massed by the Japanese for a haymaker at the fleet around Iwo Jima. The Japanese never got to throw that punch. One Marine flight of 8 planes tangled with 20 Japanese, but gun jams at the critical moment reduced the kills to 2, with another 3 damaged. Following this, the flight went after ground targets, with a squadron commander hitting a locomotive from 20-foot altitude, low enough to get mud on his windshield as it blew up. In the air. Another group off Bunker Hill was a principal in one of the weirdest air battles of the war. Assigned an escort mission, it mixed with a group of Japanese at 25,000 feet and for 20 minutes made pass after pass at the enemy, unable to fire a shot because of frozen guns. Finally, one Marine enticed a Japanese plane down to a lower altitude and shot him down, the sole kill of the fight. The Japanese broke off the engagement, and the Marines continued down to deck level to strafe their targets. In some of the fighter sweeps staged to knock out the kamikaze planes while still on the ground, the Marines ran afoul of the Japanese faculty for good camouflage, and their effectiveness suffered. One in particular is worth mention. In mid-March, a Marine flight was assigned a sweep against three airstrips on Kyushu. After the customary search for airborne opposition, they dropped near deck level to strafe. They made two passes over the first strip. There were no planes visible on the ground. The day following, photographs showed 27 cleverly camouflaged planes revetted around the three strips. Nor did every strike have a happy ending. The March 19th attack on Kure can be put down as a bad day for the fleet. Even as the strike planes were winging on their way to hit the dumps and installations around the base of Kure, kamikazes burst out of nowhere and severely damaged Franklin. Not a good beginning. Then, as the forward elements of the attack planes came into sight range of the harbor at Kure, the target coordinator reported a ship. From that point on, as one squadron commander described it, it was like a stage show. The target coordinator mentioned seeing several more ships, and then, excitedly, he transmitted, "Jesus Christ, the whole Japanese fleet is here!" The assigned targets of oil stores and ammunition dumps were forgotten. 16 Marine fighters from VMF 451 led the bombers in. The air over the harbor was alive with action. Attacking planes, anti-aircraft bursts, and over the ladder, a flock of aggressive Zeeks. The attacks were well executed and determined, but luck was against the bombers. Luck and a terrific concentration of anti-aircraft fire. Near misses were frequent and probably damaging, but the only direct hit was by VMF 451 on a carrier. A pilot said that on leaving the target, he looked over his shoulder and could see a solid mass of AA bursts that stretched from 3,000 to 13,000 feet. The same flyer noted several splashes as injured planes ditched near the rescue sub. The day closed with some of the Marines flying cover on Franklin as she limped to safer waters, while others paid a return to the Kyushu Strip, which got them 20 grounded planes. VMF 112 off Bennington figured in two actions which are regarded as perfectly executed flights against enemy aircraft. On the first occasion, 16 planes were cruising at 19,000 feet en route to the strips of Kanoya for a sweep. The formation was stacked down in divisions of four. Over East Kanoya, they were jumped by 19 or 20 Zeeks. The squadron executed a violent turn flush into the tail of the Japanese formation. In 6 seconds, five of the Zeeks were aflame. Shoots blossomed all over the sky as the enemy bailed out. Unimpressed by this catastrophic beginning, the Zeeks kept coming. The Marines maintained their divisions as fighting teams of four, and the slaughter continued. When the Japanese broke off the dogfight, the Marine pilots had 9 confirmed kills to their credit, and 6 Japanese aircraft severely damaged. Back on the carrier, a careful examination revealed not so much as a hole in any of the Corsairs. VMF-112's success continued. Arriving on station over Amami Oshima, they spotted a half a dozen Kates, most frequent suicide type, escorted by 15 Jacks and Zeeks. The Marines stacked out at 9,000, 11,000, and 12,000 feet, and the Japanese were above. A full-power climb brought the Corsairs level at time of contact. One division hit the dive bombers and got 4 or 5 on the first pass. The other two divisions tangled with the fighters. With the exception of the Jacks, the Japanese were not too aggressive. The Kate had escaped blasting in the first pass, high-tailed it to the horizon, and several of the Marines hot on their tails. After the first contact, the action changed to a melee. One of the flyers described it as a rat race from the deck to the ceiling. Again, the Marines fought in divisions with 4 planes as mutually supporting unit. This time, their tactics paid off with an even better score. 12 Marines splashed 20 enemy aircraft without even serious damage to a Corsair or a pilot. Numerous other strikes are of interest. On April 7th, when the Navy had its big day against the anchored Japanese fleet and sank the battleship Yamato, the cruiser Agano and 3 destroyers, the The only Marine pilots flying on the attack hit the Agano square in the forward turret. In the turkey shoot against the desperate kamikaze attacks on the fleet during the Okinawa battle, the Marines racked up their share of kills. Along with Navy fighters, they shared the barrier and interceptor patrols that were thrown up to the north. During these flights, pilots ran across plane types they had never seen in their recognition drills. Obsolete fighter and bomber craft, biplane trainers, the scrapings of the Japanese aircraft barrel. They came in droves of 160 to 200 at a time. Evasive action, save for slight turns, was rare. The sole difficulty was spotting them and getting to them before they passed the fleet screen. One Marine blasted his guns into a kamikaze and the plane disintegrated before his eyes. Something flapped across his windshield, temporarily blocking his vision, then tore loose. It was his impression that it might have been the ceremonial robe worn by the Japanese pilot. On returning to the carrier, he discovered a length of silken cord caught in his aerial, probably from the tie that bound the robe around the pilot's waist. Lessons learned. The F-4U Corsair proved its worth as a carrier aircraft. In experienced hands, it was satisfactory on and off the deck, and its speed and climb in air combat provided the fleet air arm with a killing edge over the best land-based fighters the enemy could launch. The special nature of carrier operations was emphasized. Had time permitted, a more thorough introduction to the tricks of the aircraft carrier trade before the Marines went aboard, operational accidents would have probably been reduced. These losses were not excessive at any stage, but their incidence among the Marines in their first weeks aboard was usually well above that for experienced naval squadrons for the same work. Adding new laurels to the reputation of Marine Air, the carrier program is further proof, if any is needed, that the can-do spirit of the Marine Corps in World War II resulted in a fighting organization with a versatility unmatched in the history of war.